We have the pleasure of having Senator Jeff Wilson on the horn with us. Good morning.
Well, good morning, Johnny, and I got to start out with happy Valentine's Day today to everybody out there.
Same to you. So I feel all the love from this legislative session going on up in Olympia. Are you feeling that same love?
Well, love is like the weather. It changes, and sometimes it does come and go. Right now, we're in the middle of love me here or love me not, because our calendar is driving our daily world up here in Olympia. We have until this Friday, the 17th of February. This will be the last day in the Senate to read in committee, you know, reports of bills. You know, it's kind of like you get a speak or forever not, because after February 17th, what you really start to do is plan a bunch of funerals for your bills. Bills begin to, they begin to die. So we're at that exciting part where it's the mad last rush to get some bills into committee and out of committee. And because we have that love relationship with the House of Representatives, we need to get ready, and we already are starting to hear their bills. We volley back and forth in this process. So there's where we're at on the calendar to start out the most loving day of the year, put it that way.
So would you like to talk about some of your bills?
Every politician wants to talk about some of their bills. I would be honored to, sir.
Catalytic converters. Let's start there.
Well, I would start out with saying something snarky, like nothing to see here. However, Johnny, it is a horrific crime. In the year 2021, we became the number one spot in the entire United States for catalytic converter theft. That's not a first place to be proud of, because in all seriousness, when you take somebody's catalytic converter bill, especially from, say, let's say a working class family, you've technically disabled them to get to their work. There are people that need to go to school, to their appointments, just the art of moving around in a vehicle. And if you don't have that catalytic converter, it honestly can be devastating. I will say even life-changing to those that are victimized by the, well, the lowlifes that would like to steal those converters for quick cash. So last year, we were number one. The scariest problem now, Johnny, is that we're headed to being number one, yeah, you got it, for potentially 2 years in a row. In 2022, there were over 8,000 reports, not converters, just reports, because sometimes they steal multiple, 8,000 reports just from January to August. And at the rate we're going, we're going to be number one for two straight years. What's happening here is we were too soft on crime. My original legislation did very well, and then it passed actually through the House, but it didn't come with a whole lot of toughness. Well, I'm back this year with Senate Bill 5740, the new catalytic converter bill, and it's exciting. It has action-packed requirements like you will be legally able to buy the darn things. A lot of people do their business in the parking lot of, say, a shopping center or a convenience store by the gas pumps, and they buy and sell catalytic converters. And that may be okay, but my bill says, okay, you're going to have to be a licensed scrap metal dealer, a licensed auto wrecker. And plus, if you do buy and sell catalytic converters, say, in the big mall area in the parking lot, that's okay, but you're going to have your license displayed. Because not everybody should be able to buy catalytic converters so easily, and we already have laws on the book. But there's some more bad news, Johnny. If you'd like me, I'll tell you.
Let's hear it.
All righty. Well, my catalytic converter bill for 2023, which is the Part 2 bill from previous years, unfortunately, it probably will go to bill heaven a little early. In other words, I'm unable to get a hearing at this point, and Friday is the cutoff. So today being the 14th, Valentine's Day, there's just three more days to get my bill heard, and at this point I have been told it's not going to be heard. So what that means is, for your listeners, is that we will not have addressed catalytic converter theft at all this session. And I do believe, Johnny, that there are no bills in our colleague house, the House of Representatives. I don't believe there are any bills originating there. I think mine was the only bill this session. And although it's important, it deals with crimes, it creates a huge trail of victims from our friends, our churches, even the school buses, and we're not going to act on it.
Senator Jeff Wilson's on the horn with us from Olympia during this legislative session. I got a text from a listener, David. What are you doing to get our law enforcement the power they used to have?
That's a great question, because we have not taken any of those bills yet to the floor. And, of course, we all know we need to do that, but have we acted that? For example, police pursuits. We know that there were over 3,000 additional people that had run away or fled from the police just last year. That's a problem. However, there's some bills to fix that. However, those bills have not been blessed with giving a hearing. And in other words, you can have the greatest bill on this planet, something that matters. It would actually, Johnny, to you and me and all your listeners, equal to something like common sense. We can fix this. The problem is you need to get a chairman of a committee to hear it. And right now, as of today, the answer is no, I don't want to hear it. Now, we're going to have that talk of no, we need to hear it. It's not wanting. We know we need it. We know that violent crime is way up, traffic fatalities, drug overdoses. So there's a couple of major bills this year. Obviously, one I'm talking about is the police pursuit bill, and we do have fixes, but the fix must be heard. We also know that the Blake legislation, that's pretty hot and heavy, too. That's the one where the Schedule I drugs really don't have a consequence. In other words, heroin, meth, cocaine, fentanyl. Right now, it's pretty much, in for three times, just a simple misdemeanor with no consequences. There is some effort underway, and I'm hoping on that famous word, bipartisan, that we get a fix to the Blake decision. The very least I'm hearing is that should come to the floor, I hope, this year, where we would adjust it at least from, say, just a misdemeanor to a gross misdemeanor. But it's better, Johnny, to do that than it is to go the other way. And the other way is, drugs are just legal, because that's what's going to happen in July. If we do not address the Blake decision in some form of action on the floor and it gets passed all the way to the governor, there's no consequence legally for personal use of drugs. And that's where we're headed. That's the urgency. So to your listener on that, I appreciate the questions. Public safety should always be number one. And you should feel safe. You should be safe.
Okay, so why aren't these bills going through or being heard?
Well, without any silence on the radio, that's not a good thing. As I mentioned earlier, the chairman of a committee is truly has that one person, has that one soulful power that says, I'm going to hear a bill or not. And already, at least on one occasion, the chairman of that committee has said no. Despite your pleas, despite the other senators' urgency to look, we only have 60-some days left in this session, we need to hear it. And, my view is, of course, well, why won't you hear it? If you got the votes and you don't like the bill, then you could beat it up. You could, in fact, kill that bill in committee. But at least get it in front of everybody, which puts it on TVW, puts it on the air, and so that we can move the process. But for every process, Johnny, there's a step. We haven't even gotten to step one yet. the answer has been no. I don't want to hear it.
So who's the chair of that committee?
The chair of that committee is Senator Dingra. That's a law and justice committee. So that will be that's something that we're working on. I know that leadership on both sides are making that discussion. But the simple of the matter of the fact is, it's not to discuss to create a bill. There are bills created to be discussed. That just needs to happen. Now, the party's not over yet. Again, I have to make sure that your you know, your listeners, you've got to have hope, especially on Valentine's Day. I do. I'm hoping for maybe an early Christmas present, even though it's Valentine's Day, and we would get news that miraculously it would get heard. Now, if it doesn't, a bill doesn't get heard in committee, there are some, well, I don't want to say that really imply this, but there are some last-ditched efforts that senators, I'm not sure about representatives, can use when we get on the floor. We have certain rules, Johnny, that would allow us to say, and we would, you can actually, you know, bring in a bill to the floor later. But it involves a vote of all the senators there. And I've been around a few years. This is my third year. I've seen the maneuver tried a couple times, but I've never seen it successful. I believe it is a rare instance. But naturally, if we have to do that maneuver on the floor, I'm certainly for it, because I think that your listeners and everybody deserves that we react and take safety seriously.
So I've heard recently that McNeil Island sex predators are going to be returning to Grays Harbor under a new state law. Do you have a comment on that?
Well, I think that there's plenty to say on that. Again, here we go. It's a process thing. You know, everybody may say, well, what you do is kind of boring. It's a lot of process. Not when the process completely changes communities. And let me give you an example. Just nearby to the District 19 that I'm so proud to represent, there's the community called Tenino. And Tenino just went through a very, very, very public uproar when a contract houser was going to receive and place, let's say, certain type people that were maneuvering around the incarceration process. Oh boy, did the neighborhood stick up for their rights, and I'm glad they did, because they were surprised. Here's a community transitional home popping up. They didn't have any notice, any say. The good news is senators reacted. Senator Drew McEwen, who is from the 35th District, he dropped a bill called Senate Bill 5544, and yes, I signed on to that bill. And that bill is very important, somewhat towards the Grays Harbor end. And basically what it's going to do is quit surprising people. This bill says you will provide adequate notice to local communities when the Department of Social and Health Services or, you know, people along those lines start referring and creating contracts with people that have rental houses, a housing provider we call them, for alternative placement, that there's going to be some form of notice to the community instead of one day the neighbor saying, well, how come there's quite a few people living at that house down the street, or what's this for? You really should have the notice and have these discussions before this happens, rather than, well, it's already there. And Tenino created quite an uproar, which demonstrated that we in the Senate reacted with this bill. And like I say, Johnny, we really do need to do a much better job of even though it's maybe a touchy subject, it's sensitive. Well, so what? That's what we're supposed to do. We're supposed to communicate. So I have confidence that this bill is working its way through. I hope it gets to the floor and passes, because communities like Grays Harbor, let's just say this, there's a business here that people that provide housing for those that have maybe coming out for, people that, I'm not going to say incarcerated. I get in trouble, but I'm going to say incarcerated. those are housing contractors. They don't rent their house for free. to house these people for a transitional method. This is a profit business. The problem is the profit business doesn't come with any notice to their surrounding community. And if it does, it's usually somewhat hushed. No more. It's time that we kiss and tell the activities.
Right. I know of a place just up the road from here, and a friend that lives in the neighborhood's like, yeah, this is at that house. They house, you know, these people. And it's kind of hush-hush. Just the people in the neighborhood know about it for whatever reasons. But so it's a profit thing. Hey, I have a bunch of houses here that I could rent out to people that need them coming from McNeil Island. Send them here, and I'll rent my place to them. Is that it?
Absolutely. The departments at the state here, they do a request for proposal process to check about what's the availability of housing options for individuals that, say, qualify for a less restrictive alternative. And absolutely, again, you could get a government paycheck, Johnny. Your rental house, don't worry, the check won't bounce and it'll always be there. So there is the business. There is the business that is out there for those that are in the, that have that housing that's available for the state departments to, well, rent. And they do it through vouchers. And like I say, you don't ever worry about that tenant not paying, because it's the state of Washington. Remember, we're rich and famous. We can afford it.
Senator Jeff Wilson on the phone with us. He has graced us with his presence via cellular telephone on Valentine's Day during the legislative session in Olympia. So, you know, he could be doing all this work stuff, and he took a break to spend some time with us. I appreciate it, man.
Well, I appreciate the opportunity. We are stuck with each other for a very good purpose, Johnny.
Indeed. So, what about this kit home bill?
Well, I am very proud that today my bill, Senate Bill 5657, gets a hearing. And the hearing, I get to sell the bill, and the bill goes like this. We have a housing crisis. Everybody knows that. Everybody says the word. And we're going to need a lot of options, Johnny, a lot to, let's say, reduce this crisis into something more manageable. But one way to do it, I took a little bit outside the box, and no pun intended, but remember the old days when you could buy a home, say on the Sears and Roebuck catalog, and it would come in a box, or a box car, excuse me, so it would be factory built, but not factory assembled. So my kit home bill says, listen, we need a lot of homes, and we need them right now. Why can't we do factory built homes that do-it-yourselfers can install in the field or use a contractor with or without a foundation? And what this does is it says, let's start with 800 square foot and less homes. It's okay, put the word tiny home in there, I don't care. And let's have them build at a factory, build it to code with code materials, but it's assembled in the field. And what you get out of this is you get government out of the way. Because government should only have to approve one blueprint one time, Johnny. And the government has the ability to waive fees. The government has the ability to do inspections. These could be plug-and-play kit homes. And they range. I mean, by golly, you can get a home from $9,000 on up. Why aren't we mass-producing homes that people can actually afford, potentially pay them off and truly own them someday? Wouldn't Henry Ford, Johnny, be proud of mass producing something that truly could help change, you know, in this case, a crisis? So the kit home bill, I'm very proud to introduce that, really, because nobody else has, but we need to do it. Even the state of Oregon, our neighbor, they're already doing it. They're building mass timber type homes at the factory. They're more modular and more factory assembled per se, and they're much more expensive. But a kit home, oh come on! Whether you use it for an ADU, a mother-in-law's house, what about your kids? What about expanding your family? What about your first home? Although it may be small, sure would be nice to actually own something nowadays and conclude and attain the American dream of home ownership.
Right. Hallelujah. So apparently there's a problem with someone who wants to, like, donate an old firearm, like a really old antique museum-type firearm to museums. Is that accurate?
Absolutely. Good old and our well intentions. When we, years ago, the state of Washington did a very good thing, and that is to say, look, it was in 2014, my heavens, several years ago, the voters passed I-594, and it said, look, we're going to do criminal background checks when you do firearm transfers in the state of Washington. When you buy a firearm, you're getting a background check. And, Johnny, I don't see any problem with that. The problem with that, though, became noticed shortly after that, wait a minute, anybody ever go to a museum, and has anybody ever, say, seen a display or a scene at, say, a historical society or that museum that would be a scene from World War II and some mannequin soldiers would be dressed up in proper gear and attire? Oh, heaven forbid, one of them would be holding an old, say, an M1 Garand from the Second War, a rifle. Well, that became illegal unless the museum, a background check went on the museum, and unless the person that loaned it. A lot of families and veterans and individuals have loaned things to museums, and now the issue is, well, wait a minute, you got to get full background check. And it's not just the paperwork, Johnny. Come on. We're talking about this kind of stuff costs money, too, to transfer. So my bill says it exempts museums in historical societies from obtaining these loaner-type display equipment for that purpose of historical education. Now, I'm happy to report that I know of no incidences, not one, in the state of Washington where an old, say, rifle or handgun that was on display in a museum was ever used in a crime. And, Johnny, a lot of that reason is most of those guns and things are so unserviceable, they couldn't fire a ping-pong ball if you wanted them to. So in order to do this, I had to drop, well, it's a gun bill, but it exempts museums from that burdensome method to obtain under loan status, and then, of course, when they return it back to the people that loaned it to them, they also don't have to do a gun transfer then as well.
Okay, now, moving on with bills that you've written or associated with. Oh, hold on. I got a text message. Has your guest addressed any of the current crop of unconstitutional gun control bills? They seem voice to texting or what, but due to the war on police and rule of law by the Democrats, how about just working to repeal those unconstitutional laws?
Absolutely. Well, I can assure that listener and every other listener that you have is that gun control measures I am opposed to, and the reason is we have plenty of them. You know, our Second Amendment is completely under attack. Any bill that comes before me, I look at the constitutionality of it, and I'm here to tell that listener right now, I will not support any of those. And, you know, there's a lot of them are on the House side. There's House Bill 1240. That's a horrible bill. That bill actually goes after law-abiding gun owners exercising their constitutional rights. No, nice try. Nope, I will not support that bill now. It hasn't came before me yet. And I tell you what, Washington State already has, Johnny. We already have some of the strictest gun control laws in the nation. We have a problem of lax enforcement of existing state laws. So I can assure you that I will say that the other side of the aisle seem to be empowering criminals, and we're taking away the ability for self-defense of, say, law-abiding citizens. So there's a Senate Bill 5078 that deals with, I believe, businesses would have difficulty obtaining insurances and whatnot. I will oppose that. I'm not going to infringe any further. So, and Washington State continues to sell more concealed carry licenses by nearly 60 60,000 per year. I'm going to tell you this. We got 8 million people. Well, darn near 10% of Washingtonians conceal carry. 700,000 Washington citizens legally have concealed carry permits, and it's doubled since 2012 when the war on weapons, or excuse me, not weapons, but the war on your Second Amendment happened. So it's showing that Washington citizens are exercising their rights before they're taken away.
Do you look up any, like, House bills? I know, you know, you're a senator. You deal with Senate bills. One in particular, House Bill 1333, the Ministry of Disinformation Commission. Are you familiar with that at all?
It may be. Is that the election? You said 1333?
Yeah. Ministry of Disinformation.
We've had, you know, listen, this is another attempt. It basically says it deals with, well, you're lying, and this one is, it's a domestic violent extremism commission. And what it does is it says it's supposed to be based on public and community health, but really what it does is it recommended that the commission include stakeholders. You'd be forced and collect data. It's about domestic terrorism. And listen, we already have laws about domestic terrorism. We already have certain things that you would do that would get you in trouble, not only with your state government, but with your federal government. Listen, Johnny, I got to just tell your listeners now, what happened on January 6th, it happened. Did I think it happened in the right way? Absolutely not. And people that broke the laws, they needed to be, I guess, given the attention of the law. But quite frankly, to push it further, I think that this is just more of those knee-jerk type bills that really would like you to be afraid, that would like you to say that there's so much extreme domestic terrorism out there, you've simply got to have a bill. No, you don't. We already have the laws in place. Everybody needs to take a deep breath, think reasonably, instead of overreacting. So that bill will, if it comes over here, I think I know how I'll handle it over here.
Okay, great. On a lighter note, how about the state nickname bill?
You know, we all get called a lot of things, and you know it, and I know it. We get called things that the name. Well, what's in a name, more importantly, a nickname? A lot of us for years have answered the question when people say, well, where are you from? What state are you from? And you say, well, I'm from Washington State. And then you usually say, what's the state known for? Well, we're the Evergreen State. Well, if you say that, you really haven't broken a law, but it's really not been a legally adopted nickname. It's not the most important bill of the year, Johnny. It is not gun control or crime, but it's a bill that says, listen, why don't we officially make it legal that Washington State will be known as the Evergreen State? And I'm proud to say that another senator had tried to do this way back in 2009, and it didn't go anywhere. When I brought the bill back this year, I went around, Johnny, and within 3 hours, this may be a record, but within 3 hours I was able to get 40 out of 49 senators to sign on that bill. I simply ran out of time before I put the bill in the hopper and filed it. But this year we should get that good feeling. We should legally be known as the Evergreen State, and that'll validate all those signs that say, when you cross state lines, welcome back, or welcome to Washington, the Evergreen State. At least we're telling, I guess, the legislative truth at that point. And your license plate cover that says Evergreen State, it'll be the fact.
We have Senator Jeff Wilson on the phone with us. And it's the Valentine's edition of Local Matters, and we're talking about the love of the legislative session. Senate Bill 5556, the Nacell Youth Camp property. Can you recap what that's about?
Absolutely. The Nacell Youth Camp, located in beautiful, small Nacell in the district, for years was a facility for, let's say, troubled teenaged male youth. And what this facility did was it provided, well, correctional and instructional and vocational rehabilitation services to, I guess, those young boys instead of putting them in adult men prison. However, it finally was shut down. The governor was not in favor of this. And so the last troubled youth left there last, I believe it was September. And so now the facility's vacant. So what do you do with this facility, Johnny, that's got housing? It's got a medical facility. It's got security. It has vocational, educational classrooms. It even has its own fish hatchery. So what do you do with it? Well, once the facility was closed for correctional youth, it reverted back to what's called the department called Department of Natural Resources. But the Department of Natural Resources seemed to be beneath Department of Children and Youth and Family Services, DCYF, because they have the property title. So here you have a couple of state agencies, and they wondered what to do with this. There was some instruction by the legislature that, well, let's just make it an part of the educational, the OSPI, our state public education system, and it, maybe it would be a giant outdoor camp. But, Johnny, that's not a year-round thing. That doesn't generate revenue. This place is a going concern. So all of us in the 19th delegation decided to say, no, let's rethink this. And as we talk to people in Pacific County, it is in their area, and the locals, what would you like to see do or happen here? We talked about jobs. We talked about wellness centers. And then came the Chinook Indian tribe. And the Chinook, my bill simply says, listen, transfer this facility to the Chinook Indian tribe and let them do what they do best, somewhat similar to, say, the Quinault, what they did in Aberdeen, Hope Queen area. They created a wellness center. But I have good faith that the tribe would, who was well there before anybody else had settled in the cell, that they would get a chance to explore opportunities not just for their tribal concerns, no, but to share it such as, say, the Quinault did up north, and to create a facility or an enterprise that includes housing for everybody, includes treatment or wellness or whatever they would like to do. But I think there's been too much government involved in the Nacelle Youth Camp, and I think it's time that we expand culturally and also with respect. But we get a product out of it that everybody and everybody's culture will benefit from.
Very well, then. Okay, moving on to our through our list of Senate bills. Are there any ones that you'd like to recap or to brush up on before we go? We got about 8 minutes.
Well, I'll be real quick. My freight railroad infrastructure bill, which is Senate Bill 5494, I got to tell you, Johnny, it's a huge bill. And it's not just huge because the print's big, which is huge because it's got a lot of pages to it. It's a big bill that talks about supporting Class 2, Class 3 railroads, but that includes city railroads, a county railroad, a port railroad. We all know that there's one railroad track that comes into the Grays Harbor area that serves the community around the Hoquiam and Aberdeen area. And don't forget, along the way, Oakville, Elma, there are other people that need that train, and we need that train to be safe. So this bill allows for investments to be made by these smaller railroads and actually get a little bit of relief on sales tax for upgrades. So I want to encourage, because rail is expensive, these smaller railroads to have extra funds to spend more money, buy more rail, because they get a savings on the sales tax. There's a cap there. But what it means is continued expansion, safer crossings, and better rail. You want your choo-choo trains to stay on the track. And you need good, sturdy rail that will handle up to 286,000-pound cars. So that was my goal, because we know that there's expansion plans with the Port of Grays Harbor and other areas. You're going to actually end up with more trains, not less. Let's make them more safe and more efficient.
Okay, Senate Bill 5279, Housing Equity Property. You sponsored
Absolutely.
This. What's this about?
Well, this says this is an incentive base. A lot of times we get a large employer or somebody wants to come to town, your town, my town, any town, and they say, look, I'm going to build this factory, or I'm going to build this warehouse. I'm going to build something, and I'm going to promise you all kinds of jobs and tax benefits. But what they do is, if it takes a little bit of time to build that factory, you know that it could take a couple years to complete that. So meantime, a lot of workers come in at times that are imported into our communities to build something, and they need a place to stay, Johnny. So what happens then is, these workers with well intentions and businesses, they take away existing rentals and houses to buy or to rent while this is constructed. So there's an impact on the already tight inventory for people to live in our community. So this bill says, okay, wait a minute. You're the big factory person or the warehouse contractor. Why don't you build some factory housing? Why don't you build some employee housing? And why don't you do that housing? We'll give you a tax break to build housing while you build your factory so that you can house your workers. But you also have to set aside some of that housing for low-income people, for people that are below the average median income, we call the AMI, or that, you know, people that it has to be affordable. I hate to use that word, but that's a word we use. And so what this does is it allows them to build employee-worker housing for their own needs, but yet also provide it for the community and transfer it over. Maybe you can finish building your factory, and now this housing complex or an RV park or whatever it is, you can turn it over to the local community.
Okay, should we talk about Senate Bill 5414, voter laws?
Oh, that, we should have not have to talk about it. It should have already been known, Johnny. 5414 is a very simple bill that I have. It's had a hearing. It'll get voted on this week, probably Friday. An election law violation, really what it is, it's a little warning label, kind of like you see on the side of a cigarette pack, you know, from the Surgeon General, except this warning statement reminds everybody, when you open up that voter's pamphlet statement, when you vote, you're going to open, there's going to be a little label in there. It's going to remind you to do the right thing. You can't cheat. Don't commit voter fraud. Voting is taken seriously. It is a right, not a privilege. All this does is stamp in election law, a couple of sentences is all it is. It says, please vote the right way. Vote legally. You've got to be eligible. You've got to be a legal voter. Don't attempt a fraudulent voting method, because you can, and we would like to catch you, and we will prosecute you.
Yeah, you would think that we were already doing that stuff.
This is my second bite of the warning label apple, Johnny. I tried it last year. It didn't go anywhere, except this year it's going full speed ahead. I do expect this one to get to the floor. It should get to the floor, and I'm proud to say that some other jurisdictions picked up on my language, and they've already just adopted it all on their own and put it in their voters' pamphlets. On a couple of local entities have done this already. You would think it's common sense. We tell everybody what the speed limit is. There's a sign. We tell you when you buy cigarettes, you could get cancer. Why don't we tell you to vote honestly and legally, and if you don't, there's a consequence.
Indeed. Indeed. Well, we got about a minute left, sir. Anything you would like to wrap up with?
Absolutely. Everybody, please remember, we're not even at the halfway mark here. So sometimes what you read or hear, remember, there could be another story. The Olympia is a very active, changing environment. It changes, well, just like the weather. It can change on a moment. It can change for the good. It can change for the bad. But please remember, everybody, it's so changeable. So on this Valentine's Day, enjoy the good of your family, your friends. Be happy with just this wonderful holiday. In Olympia, we're very busy, and I'm so darn proud to serve you all. It's truly an honor to do so. So kind of stay tuned. There'll always be much to talk with.
Well, good luck fighting the good fight up there in Ole, and keep us posted. Thanks for taking the time to spend with us today.
Thank you much, Johnny. Until next time, have a wonderful week.
You too. Bye-bye. Senator Jeff Wilson.